everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Wednesday, November 8th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour and 15 minutes or so as we go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Glad to have you with me for this hump day edition of the show. Two guests join me. The first, Brian Leonard from WagerTalk.com. The second, Wes Reynolds, who you know from Twitter with the handle at Wes Reynolds. And the number one, we're going to talk college football, NFL, NBA, bunch of stuff going on here on today's program. Over at bangthebook.com, lots of great content for you to check out. I put up my UFC Fight Night 120 preview here today. Also got up the NASCAR previews for the two races at Phoenix International Raceway coming up here this weekend. That goes along with all of the college football game previews we have up. Every NFL game will be previewed here by later tonight, so you'll have that to check out over there at the website as well. And then you can use that stuff along with our matchup data section. Try your hand at the contests that we have. Cash prizes for those contests, daily or monthly streaker. Let's try that again. Daily streaker contest, monthly pick of the day, top monthly win percentage, top ROI, top number of units won. Those contests available to you for free. All you have to do is sign up with an email address over there at the website. We'll send you a daily newsletter, tell you about what we have going on over at the site. That's all that we'll do with that. Also, our sportsbook reviews. Keep those in mind. College basketball starting up here in a couple of days, so you're going to have even more games to check out, even more lines to consider, those half points, those full points, 5, 10 cents of juice, all that stuff, very, very important. So if you've only got one, maybe two sports books, consider adding a second, a third, maybe even a fourth. If you're not sure what direction to go, check out those reviews over there at bangthebook.com. And of course, you could always go to DSI Sportsbook and use that promo code BTB and the number 25 to get a $25 free bet just for signing up. 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook and 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino as well. At BetDSI, it's only a game until you bet it. Two guests coming your way here today. The first, Mr. Brian Leonard from WagerTalk.com. Brian, how's it going today, man?
Everything's going great. Thank you.
All right. Well, I wanted to follow up with what I talked about with Sports Cheat on yesterday's show. I know that you listen to the shows as well, so I'm not sure if you had a chance to catch that one yet. But one of the things that we talked about at the top of the show was we talked about power ratings, and we talked about how maybe they're carrying a little bit less importance here this far into the season. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, the thing I have with my power ratings is as the season goes on, I find less and less advantages. The lines are pretty much getting right in line where my power ratings are. I'm not one to make major adjustments, as we talked about in the past. And now at this time of the season, I rarely find anything more than 3 points away than from what I have. And the one use I have for power ratings, even though I still do them, is it tells me, for the most part, where the lines are going. Unless there's an injury of some sort that I've missed, if my line is, for example, 7.5 and the line is 4.5 and I like the favorite, I know I should play it then, because chances are it's going to end up closer to my number than away from it.
Well, and one of the things I talked about with Cheetah yesterday, and I'm sure this is something you're probably finding in your power ratings as well, is that, you know, like you, I'm finding that the majority of the games are pretty close to my numbers, but the ones that are off are just either really high variance teams or teams like a Florida State, for example, where I know they're talented, I have to respect that, but they haven't played up to that talent level. And I haven't figured out the happy medium in terms of adjusting some of those teams. You know, Florida State, of course, being probably the most notable example. Florida possibly being another one where my line's short this week against South Carolina because Florida's got a lot of talent. But we all know the situation with Florida. So are you kind of finding that where the games that do have the biggest overlay one way or another are just games you don't really want to touch?
Yeah, it's not only that. It's the teams that are really bad. The Ball States, the UTEPs, those type of teams. For the last month or so, I've seen perceived value on those teams, and a couple times I've bitten, but I haven't been biting lately, as I realize that when you're giving up 55, 60 points a game, you're not a very good football team, and it doesn't matter how many points you're getting. It's a stretch to have them come out and play that one good game. So there's a lot of times where my numbers are saying I'm supposed to be playing these really bad teams. For example, the Ball State Northern Illinois game, my line is 27.5, and it tells me to play Ball State, but I've known after watching all the injuries that they've had this season and how these lines have gone that it's supposed to be a game that I'm supposed to sit out.
One other thing I want to ask you about here, and then we'll get into some of these games. Actually, a couple of different things. But the first one I want to ask you about here is, you know, you've got bowl eligibility now as a major factor for a lot of these teams. Some teams have 3 wins and need to win out. Some teams have 4 wins, need to win 2 out of 3. Some teams can just remove all doubt here by picking up a 6th win this week. So is that a major factor for you here at this time of the year?
I think it's more of a negative factor after they get eliminated. You find this type of year, you've got all these borderline teams fighting for the bowl games, and you would expect them to give the same effort that they have given so far this season, not any extra effort, but the same effort. But when you get to the point where it's a team that's used to going to a bowl, for example, you talked about Florida State earlier. Florida State's got one of the longest, if not the longest, streak of going to bowl games. Once they get eliminated, then that would be something where you should know that they're not going to give that same type of effort. You can also see it with strengths of the teams they're playing. For example, we'll use Florida State once again. This week they're playing Clemson. I was actually supposed to go to that game earlier this year. I had that circled, and I was planning on going out and making that trip for that big game. Luckily, I didn't, because it's not such a big game anymore. But players want to be able to play the best against the best competition. You would expect that from them this week. If for example, they don't show up this week, then obviously they're not going bowling, and you could be pretty confident that you could make some money going against Florida State the rest of the year. That's something that I take a look at is the teams that have been bowling for a while and they get eliminated to go against them as the season goes in. Joe Gavazzi, who's been in the industry as long as I have, even longer, calls them the towel tossers. And he goes against those teams as the season goes on, the towel tossers. And you have to pay a little bit more on the line, but you know who's going to give a good effort in those games and who is not.
One thing I do want to touch on here, and I'm not sure if our listeners have seen this, and maybe you didn't see it either, that Florida State has added that Louisiana Monroe game back onto the schedule for December 2nd. So if they beat Delaware State, win at Florida in the rivalry game, and then beat Louisiana Monroe, they'll get the 6 wins. They made a bowl in 35 straight years. But it's very interesting to look at something like that where, you know, for Florida State this week, I mean, not to say that they're not going to go and give an effort against Clemson. They are catching a huge number. I think the last I looked, it was 17, something like that. Maybe it's come down a little bit. Not really a game that's on my radar. It's actually 16 right now. But for Florida State here, yeah, obviously they'd like to win that game and they'd like to play well. But also, with this Louisiana Monroe safety net game added back on, they're probably going to be a favorite in their 3 remaining games. So if this thing gets off the rails a little bit early on for Florida State, I kind of wonder if maybe Clemson as a second half play becomes something to look at, because now they're not in, you know, a mode where they have no margin for error because they picked up that 12th game at the tail end.
Yeah, this is going to be a telling game for Florida State. And you'll be able to tell in the second half what kind of effort they're giving. But like them, I think the number is a little bit high based on the talent on the team. I watch every Clemson game. I haven't been that impressed with Clemson this year. They don't have any explosive plays offensively. The defense is still good. But to lay a big number to a quality team, I definitely don't think they're one of the top 4 teams at this point. But if Florida State is in that game at the half, and you could expect them to be in it for the full game, if they do fall behind at the half and they see that you're getting less of an effort for the second half, I would have no problem playing against them in those remaining games that are lined. Get out there first, because if you see it, everybody else is going to see it too. So especially that ULM, because, you know, those kids from the Sun Belt, they want to play in the SEC. They want to play in the ACC, and they don't get recruited for those teams. So that means a lot. So even though we know that Florida State may be down this year, when they're talking to their grandkids and their kids and say, hey, did I tell you that time we beat Florida State? Well, Florida State, people are going to remember, said, hey, they must have been really good, and that was a hell of a game. They don't know that it may have been the down year for Florida State.
All right, one other thing I want to ask you about here, and then we'll get into some of these specific games. I want to touch on coaching situations, because we have a lot of those here at this point of the season. You've got lame duck head coaches that are just waiting to get fired. A guy probably like a Kevin Sumlin at Texas A&M. Definitely Butch Jones at Tennessee. And there are a few others out there. And everybody knows by now who those guys are. Then you've got some interim guys that are going to have three, maybe four games to see what they can figure out. Maybe they'll get lucky enough to coach the team in a bowl game. And then they'll, you know, find themselves as a coordinator or a position coach somewhere else. And then, of course, you have the situations where you've got teams that know that their coaches are probably going to be gone. A situation like Central Florida, Scott Frost is going to find a bigger job. There's probably not much of a question about that. I think one team that we'll talk about here today, Toledo, I think there's a good chance Jason Candle finds a little bit of an upgrade here this offseason as well. But, Brian, when it comes to coaching situations, what do you use in terms of trying to figure out if you want to play on them, if you want to avoid them? Are you looking for any specific type of research or some notes on it?
Not really. And most of the kids will come out and tell you they like to coach. You can hear through some of the beat writers that they rarely come out and say that this isn't a player that or a coach that, that doesn't get along with the kids or whatever. So you expect a good effort. And it all depends on, you know, how many seniors are on the team and if it's a young team. If it's a team that you mentioned Jason Candle, Toledo's gone through a good amount of coaches over the last decade or so because they have had good records and they have moved along to other locations and other jobs. So I think that wouldn't make as much difference as if you've got a guy who's been at a place for a long time and finally he's having that big year and people are starting to notice him. I think the kids would want to, even though he may be leaving, they would want to give a better effort for him when they're leaving. So it's unless you are have some information about the individual teams and an insight from some of the players, some of the writers, really it's too much of a question mark for me. And there's enough question marks on handicapping these games to add to it. So I don't let it affect me that much in my handicapping.
All right, let's look at a few action matchups here. We'll look at Wednesday night's two of the Wednesday night games. There are three of them that are all action. We're not going to touch on Kent State, Western Michigan. But by the way, I wrote up my college football news and notes piece over at bangthebook.com today. Two more running backs down for Western Michigan. So they're basically down to their primary guy, Jarvion Franklin. And they've got the backup quarterback already. No depth at the running back position. So keep that in mind here if you are watching that game, maybe looking for a live betting opportunity or something of that sort. But time game here in the MAC tonight. Game 107-108 on the board between Toledo and Ohio. This number opened 6 earlier on in the week. My personal number was 2, so I'm not really surprised to see the move down to 3.5 at Bookmaker and DSI, 4 at the rest of the market. Are you surprised by this line move?
Not really. My line is a little bit higher, so it would say to play Toledo, but it's in the dead number area, so I'm not looking to play it as much. So this game means more to Ohio to me, although Toledo does have a revenge game. They lost to Ohio last year at home 31-26 as a 16-point favorite, and this was on one of these MAC action games on a Thursday. And they also have, you know, they got Bowling Green on deck, and then they got another revenge game after that on Western Michigan. So if you're looking ahead for next week when they go to Bowling Green, that would be a sandwich situation for Toledo there, especially if Toledo wins this game against Ohio. I think we could definitely see a situation next week where if you take a look at that opening number, you may be able to get a nice number with Bowling Green. Who I actually had yesterday in one of my rare MAC losses. I had them yesterday. I didn't have anything on tonight's card. Kind of wanted to play Kent State because Western Michigan, as you said, it's a running team that's not going to put a lot of points on the board against you. So, and they're down to, as you mentioned, only one running back at this point. So, but yeah, unfortunately I didn't have any plays today in the MAC, but I think the number shows a little bit of value on Toledo, but I think the game is more important for Ohio, and it's a proving ground for Ohio because these two may end up playing for the MAC championship. So slight lean with Ohio here, even though my number leans the other way, but I won't be getting involved in this one.
Now, I want to sort of run through a list here of the things that you touched on. For one thing, Toledo and Bowling Green is a rivalry game. That those two campuses about 25 miles apart. They have some heated rivalries in both football and basketball. So that is a game that, while it's not going to save Bowling Green's season necessarily, it is one that they're definitely going to show up for. Now, with this Toledo-Ohio game, you know what? Like you said, these two teams probably will wind up meeting each other again in the MAC Conference Championship game. And, of course, with Akron's loss yesterday, Ohio can wrap that thing up here next week, irregardless or irrespective of what they do in this game tonight against Toledo. Now, what's really hard for me, Brian, and probably the reason I have this game at two, is that I look at Ohio, and they've been very impressive. They've got a top 40 offense, top 40 defense in the per-play metrics and the points-per-game metrics, but they haven't been tested by a team like Toledo. So that's hard for me. When you get to a week 11 and you feel like you don't really have a good pulse on a team, that makes it a challenge, because it wouldn't shock me at all if Ohio wins this game outright, and offensively with Nathan Rourke, they very well could. It also wouldn't surprise me if they lose this game by three touchdowns, just because they haven't played anybody like Toledo yet. So I think it's really a high variance game here, and I think that speaks to what you said about your number says Toledo, the spot to you kind of says Ohio. I think that, you know, for a game that's going to draw a lot of attention here because it's a MAC game, because it's a Wednesday night, it's a tricky handicap for people that want to get invested.
It definitely is. And although I know Ohio is going to get full effort here because I still have to make it to that championship game, you wonder from a Toledo standpoint. Now, I did mention that they had that revenge, but if they're going to play them again in another month or so here, what kind of effort, what do they want to show in this game? Just too many questions from me to want to get involved in this game.
No, I agree. That's an excellent point. That was the last point I was going to make before we moved on from this one. All right, let's talk about the battle for the Michigan MAC trophy. And yes, this is actually a real thing, the directional rivalry between Eastern Central and Western Michigan. Eastern Michigan's a two-point favorite here in this game. They lost six games in a row by a combined total of 23 points. They were favored by more than that last week and then wound up blowing out Ball State, which is something that seems like everyone's going to do here throughout the rest of the season. Brian, what do you think about this number? Is the right team favored here?
I made it 1.5 for Eastern, so it's about right where I put it. I'm not going to get involved with this, but it would not surprise me. This is the game that finally catches up to Eastern Michigan. Their last seven games, they've all been very close games. Three of those games going to overtime. Two of the last three games going to overtime. They did have that breather last week against Ball State, and we were able to take advantage of that. But now they're playing a Central Michigan team who not only hasn't had any overtime games, they had a bye week 2 weeks ago before they played Western Michigan last week, a confidence-building 35-28 win when they were down 21-7 at the half. So Central's going to come into this game with a little bit more pep, I think, than Eastern Michigan. My number says Eastern Michigan wins in a close one, but I can't lay it. This is probably one of the games that's as tight as it could be from a point spread standpoint for myself. So this is a game I'm going to be sitting out. I'm not going to get involved in this one.
And the spread is really interesting here because I understand Central Michigan's not a great team, and they do have a very good defense. Offensively, they've been very inconsistent. Defensively, they're in the top 50 in terms of yards per play. They might even be just inside the top 30, I think. But you have Eastern Michigan laying points on the road, which is something that they virtually never do. I mean, this is a team that made a bowl game last year for the first time since, I think, what, 1987? So you have this program now that has these expectations. And what's ironic is we circle this back to the bowl eligibility discussion. Eastern Michigan needs to win out. They play at Central, at Miami of Ohio, who has Gus Ragland back now. And then on a short week, they play Bowling Green. So Eastern Michigan can conceivably make it to a bowl. They're a short favorite as of now here tonight. They'll be a short dog against Miami of Ohio on the road probably next week, and then be a decent favorite against Bowling Green the following week. Central Michigan still needs a win for a bowl game. They've got Eastern Michigan here this week. They should win at Kent next week, and if they lose this game this week, they're in a play-on spot against Kent next week because their last game is against Northern Illinois. So, again, a lot of considerations here for this game.
Yeah, you mentioned the Eastern Michigan not being familiar as a road favorite. Last year, they were 1-0 as a road favorite. You had to go back a full decade to see them as a road favorite any other time. So over the last decade, they played one game as a road favorite, and this year they haven't been yet. So, yeah, it's a situation that they don't find themselves into very often. And I think this is a good game to watch for Eastern Michigan for the remainder of the season. If they do get the full effort here and we're able to play into it, that would be pretty impressive for them with the Miami Ohio and the Bowling Green on deck. And as you, if you watch that Miami Ohio game last night, the quarterback came back and he looked pretty much out of it the first half. But as he started getting some timing down in the second half, he started hitting his receivers. I believe it was like 11 to 12 to start the second half. So if he's back, Miami is once again a force. And it'll be a tough game for Eastern Michigan next week.
One other thing, and I don't know how much bearing this actually has on the game, but I mentioned that Michigan MAC trophy, which goes to the team that wins this this rivalry set against Eastern and Western and Southern, or Central, excuse me. John Bonamigo last week, there was a picture that came up on Twitter of the trophy for beating Western Michigan in bed with him. He slept with the trophy. His wife took the picture. If Central Michigan can win this game and win both of those directional rivalry games, win that Michigan MAC trophy, it'd be for the first time since 2013. So, again, I don't know necessarily what that means, but given how excited the coach was and how excited the players were to get that game over Western last week, maybe that is a little bit of a motivating factor. I don't know, but I'll say this. Maybe not the best game to bet, and I know people are going to be following Toledo and Ohio, but this might be a pretty good game to watch, too, that may come down to the wire.
Yeah, I saw that picture. I got a little giggle out of that. I think a lot of it had to do with the way they came back in that game because they were down pretty much the entire game. And if you took a look at the first half numbers, they had less than 100 yards in the first half. They looked like a dead team. I think, in fact, I played Western Michigan in the second half of that game because they had dominated the first half, and the weather was really bad. The chances of Central Michigan coming back Central Michigan coming back in that game and winning that game were very slim at that point. And for that big comeback to come back and win that game, you couldn't help but be happy for him. And obviously he showed it, and the kids and were really excited about it. And he's just showing how much that meant to him. And of course, that's the good part. The bad part is now when you see the opposition that you're playing this week sees you in bed with the trophy, they want it even more. So, but I did think that was a funny occurrence, and it was a lighthearted poke at this rivalry and this Michigan threesome.
All right, I think that's something completely different, Brian. But we'll save that for a different show. All right,
another bad picture we don't want to see, right?
All right, let's go to this Thursday night game here in the ACC between North Carolina and Pitt. When I wrote up my preview earlier in the week at bangthebook.com, I had a great stat for this game that Pitt was a double-digit favorite in a conference game for the first time since making the move from the Big East to the ACC. Well, of course, now the number is down to 9 or 9.5, so you know that stat no longer applies. But the fact remains that Pitt has not been this big of a favorite in conference games, and they're taking on a North Carolina team just completely wiped out by injuries. This is a team that has 19 guys that would be on the equivalent of IR that are out for the season, not to mention the other guys that have had week-by-week injuries and some of the other stuff that goes on throughout the year. North Carolina 0-6 in the ACC, 1-8 overall. And, Brian, we knew this would be a tough year, losing Mitch Trubisky, losing all the guys they had in the backfield, Elijah Hood, and they lost Ryan Switzer. They lost pretty much everybody on that offense. I don't think that we expected it to get this bad with Larry Fedora's team. Now the question becomes, sitting here at 1-8, no wins in conference, how much is left in the tank for this team?
Well, the good news is they're coming off of that bye week. And before going into the bye, they played Miami. And that was, you know, obviously Miami had the look ahead to Virginia Tech last week. Sure, I'd give them that. But for North Carolina to stick in that game was very impressive. At the half, they're down 7-6. They lose 24-19. I think coming off of that game where after they played Virginia Tech the week before and were just slaughtered, they were down 35-0 at the half, lose 59-7. I think that was a good omen going into the bye week, get some of those kids that have been banged up a chance to get back out there and play. And now they're playing a team that they have dominated. They've crushed Pittsburgh the last few years, big winning streak against the Pitt Panthers. And this was one of the games I actually did get involved with that we're going to speak about. And I took North Carolina plus the points here. Pittsburgh, as you pointed out, not a team that is used to being a big favorite here. And if you take a look at the season for Pittsburgh, this is not a team who puts a lot of points on the board. They got 42 against Rice, one of the worst teams in college football. Last time out, they got 31 against Virginia. But you take a look at most of their games, they're scoring in the teens and the 20s. Other than those two games, they've never scored more than 24 points in a game. And here they are laying that big number to a North Carolina team who has dominated them in the past. And with that extra week to prepare for North Carolina, I think is a big difference maker here. I know Pitt also had their bye last week too, but it doesn't mean nearly as much to them as it does to North Carolina here. Because as you have pointed out, not only have they had these 19 players that were out for the season, they've got guys that were on the depth chart beginning of the season, third string, fourth string guys who were getting starter and second string minutes. So those guys came into the season not expected to play at all or get any time at all, and they're pretty banged up. And that bye week really makes a difference for a team like that, especially a team that's gone into the bye week on the losing streak. As you pointed out, they got that win over Old Dominion in week three, and that's it for the season. So I expect a really good effort out of North Carolina this week, and that was way too many points, in my opinion, on this here. I only made the line five, and I grabbed those points when it came out with North Carolina, and I still think it's a very good play.
Yeah, I got this number six, so I have it a little bit lower as well. And when you look at the bowl situation for Pitt, they have four wins. They've got three games left. They play North Carolina this week, which they're obviously, as we just mentioned, a pretty comfortable favorite. But they're at Virginia Tech and then host Miami in the last two games. And obviously Miami, I mean, it's a difficult spot because Miami could have everything in the world to play for if they're still undefeated, but could have very little to play for. Because if they lose this game to Notre Dame here this week, they're not going to be in the college football playoff. They've already almost locked up the Coastal Division as long as Virginia doesn't run the table, and they're probably not going to do that. So Miami may not have anything to play for in that November 24th game. So Pitt may be in a position to get to a bowl. That only matters if they're able to win tonight's game. And, you know, I just think if we look at a very strict, very basic, very simple handicap, I can't lay 9 points with Pitt with the defense that they've had under Pat Narduzzi. It makes it very hard to blow teams out when you can't stop them.
When you get beaten the long ball, although I don't know if that's going to have much of an effect here against North Carolina, but that was when Pitt's looked bad, is when they've gone up against passing offenses. They've looked really bad. They haven't looked so bad against the running teams, but they're not the greatest run stoppers in college football. And yeah, it's even if they win this game, you mentioned the teams they have on deck, it's still going to be tough for them to get to that bowl game. They're going to be substantial underdogs in both those games. So we'll have to see what kind of effort they show tonight. But I think this is the spot that, you know, North Carolina has been a few times this year that my numbers have said there should be a play on them, but because of all the injuries, you haven't been able to play them. Now coming off the bye, I think this is the one time the rest of the season we can get some pretty good value here on the Tar Heels.
If you'll pardon a bad pun here, there may be a buy sign on North Carolina here as they come off of that off week. One quick note out here in the marketplace, Toledo now down to a 3-point favorite at BetOnline and DSI. So it looks like day of the game money coming in here on Toledo. And we'll see if we can push this thing down through three. If some rogue 2.5 show up out there on Toledo, there would definitely be a line value grab available in a situation like that. But Brian, one other game I want to touch on with you here from a college football standpoint. We'll go to the AAC here for some Friday night action between Temple and Cincinnati. Temple, a 2.5-point favorite here in this game on the road at Nippert Stadium, which is pretty impressive in and of itself because Temple is a team that I couldn't adjust down fast enough early on in the season. And now all of a sudden it looks like they've kind of picked it back up a little bit.
Yeah, you take a look at their early games. They get blown out at Notre Dame 49-16. That South Florida game, I believe, was on national TV. They lose that game 43-7. They looked really bad early on. But then once the schedule lightened up a little bit, they looked a little bit better. East Carolina, they win that handily 34-10. Connecticut, they do lose that game 28-24 as a double-digit favorite. Army goes to overtime, and they actually lost that game to Army. But I actually had Army in that game. I bet them, and I said this is a bad spot in the situation in that game. I was lucky to win that game with Army. So then they come out with Navy and get that win against Navy last time out. But there's a definite feel when they played teams that they just don't have the players for. They were blown out in the games that they were as good or better than. For the most part, they played them pretty close. Obviously, Cincinnati's not a team that has a lot more talent than they do. It'll be in that same area there. And my numbers actually has – my raw number has Cincinnati a two-point favorite, which would lean me to that side. But I really can't find enough on this game to really want to put a play on. Cincinnati's been one of those teams defensively. They have not looked good all season long, giving up 36 to Michigan, 38 to Marshall, 51 to Central Florida, 33 to USF, and SMU gets 31 in overtime. So when they played an offense that's they're not nearly as good, they just can't compete. But, you know, they're playing a Temple team who's not really known for that offense. So I expect this to be a low-scoring game. I think the under is probably the thing I would look at if I was looking at this game. And, you know, last week they come out and beat Tulane 17-16. So I would expect another low-scoring game here out of these two.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably the way to go with this game, too. I mean, South Florida only getting 33 on you is not that big of a deal. SMU only getting 31, yeah, not that big of a deal. I mean, those are two offenses that can put up a lot of points. Tulane last week, a running team with the option, only 16 points there. And this isn't really a big surprise. I think that this is maybe something that our listeners will want to keep in mind. We talk about all the new head coaching hires that are going to be coming down the pike here. For Cincinnati, you know, Luke Fickell's a defensive-minded guy. I mean, Luke Fickell was a defensive coordinator at Ohio State. Three straight unders. They started out 4-2 to the over. Now they've played three straight unders. As you start to go throughout a season, you know, Cincinnati's offense is not improving at all. But I really wouldn't expect it to with a guy like Luke Fickell. I would expect the defense to improve, and it has, judging by the fact that there are three straight unders. Now, Cincinnati's only scored 16 points per game in those games, but the fact remains that I think when you get a coach that specializes on one side of the ball, and also you can look at this from a Tulane standpoint, although their offense is getting a little bit better, this Jeff Collins defense seems to be gaining some confidence a little bit here week in and week out. Now, they have played back-to-back option teams, so now the task at hand gets a little bit easier. So I think you're onto something there with the under, and I think that's a good angle for our listeners to consider going into future seasons, where if a team that has a marginal or worse offense hires a defensive-minded guy, late in the year, unders should be pretty good in those situations.
Yeah, and I did want to point out a couple things when you're looking at the stats from these teams. A lot of times, if a team plays the same kind of offense as you do, your stats are going to be a little different. We've seen it with the option teams, Army, Navy, Air Force, or Tulane this season. When you play a team that sees the same thing as you do in practice all the time, you're going to perform better against a team like that. So make sure when you're playing a team, like say you are playing a Tulane or an Army or something, when you're looking at your stats, to back out those stats when they are playing teams to play the same type of offenses they do, because they see it all the time. So that'll give you a little bit better grasp on what should happen when they're not playing a team like that. Also, we're far enough into the season now where you could start using, or if you haven't already, started using your numbers from just the conference games. And like I'm really big on explosive plays, and a lot of times you'll find teams from the lesser conferences, they play the better teams at the beginning of the year, and that really throws off your stats. But once you get to this point of the season, now you can back out when they played the Ohio States and they played the Florida States and the bigger name schools. You can back that out now and just use your conference numbers. And that really gives you great opportunities to play some underdogs, because a lot of these underdogs have gotten crushed when they've gone out of conference. They get back into conference, and then all of a sudden you start looking at their explosive plays, and they're pretty much right on where the opposition has been, because not all these teams take the big paycheck. So that's something else you want to take a look at is using just conference stats from here on out.
That's an excellent point, and a follow-up point I'll make to that, too, is that when you look at college football, you know, there's a lot of quarterback turnover, there's a lot of running back turnover, there's a lot of turnover at all positions, because coaches are either plugging and playing their recruits because they've taken over for somebody else, or a guy's just ineffective, or it's simple injury attrition that, you know, we see a lot in college football, to where you probably have teams that over the first five, six games, maybe they were playing somebody at quarterback, over the last three games, they're playing somebody different at quarterback, and using the year-to-date numbers may not be the best way to go. So like you said, I think you're at the point of the year now where maybe narrowing your focus, looking a little bit smaller of a sample size, whether it's conference play or last three game splits, something like that, because there's just so much personnel turnover.
Yeah, definitely. Like last night, Akron's quarterback was ruled out late in that game, and he didn't end up starting. And they had a freshman come in who had some garbage time before that. And while he actually looked pretty good, I thought, for a freshman getting his first start on the road, you obviously cannot use your Akron stats for the full season when you're going up against something like that, because you've got an established quarterback that came into the season established and was one of the better quarterbacks in the MAC. Now you've got a freshman quarterback coming in for his first start against a Miami team, and you mentioned the quarterback change there, the quarterback coming back. So you've really got to take a look at how these teams have done with these, with each quarterback, and if you can't, if you don't have the ability to know every team in and out, like most of us don't, we're not, you know, the Phil Steeles and some of these guys that have just got one of those memories that can, that know the third string punter on some of these teams. Just keep in mind on who the quarterbacks are, what the quarterbacks do, if they've had the experience, if they're a running quarterback, if they're a passing quarterback, and that'll really help you out when you go back and look at their schedule performed up to that point.
And one last thing here regarding Maction, like I talked about, Ohio and Akron play each other next week. You may get a little bit of additional value on Akron, depending, of course, on the Toledo outcome for the Bobcats, but also because, you know, that number opened 3.5. It went up into the 5.5-6 range. Pinnacle opened at 5.5. It was 7.5-8 before Woodson was even announced out. So, you know, that was one of those games that was constantly moving as we went throughout the week, as it looked like Ragland was going to play. And then, of course, you saw the adjustment right before kickoff with Woodson being out. But, you know, from an odds maker standpoint, they're going to look at it and say, okay, we didn't get much Akron money last week. You know, people are going to remember that Akron only scored 14 points. People may forget that the backup played. So we may see a little bit of an inflated line for Ohio next week. And those are the things that you want to look at here late in the year, because as we said, there are just so many more extenuating circumstances that factor into these games more so than the power ratings. But Brian Leonard from wagertalk.com, what's going on over there right now, Brian?
I've had a really good start to the week here. I've got a lot of my plays up on the site right now. I've got a big play coming up on Saturday. I've got, you've already got my play for Thursday, which is the North Carolina Tar Heels here, but I've got a lot of my plays up there, getting more into the basketball, now the college basketball starting up, more into basketball. I do hockey, have a nice start to the hockey season. I haven't put out many plays in hockey, but you're only getting the best of the best. I'm not going to force up any plays there. So if you're looking for day-to-day handicapper, I've been on a nice run, despite the loss last night on Bowling Green, but we'll get it back tonight, and we'll get it back for you the rest of the season here.
And you can follow Brian on Twitter at @BLeonardSports. Brian Leonard, wagertalk.com. Appreciate your time as always, man. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Sounds great. Best of luck to everyone.
Good stuff there on today's show from Brian Leonard of wagertalk.com. And again, you know, we're talking more about technical and situational types of handicapping here. You know, we talk a lot about power ratings early on in the season, and those are very important because you want to make sure that you're rating these teams accurately. They're able to get out there in front of some of those market moves. But here at this time of the year, there's just so much more when it comes to situationals, when it comes to looking at the standings and looking at bowl eligibility. And also too, you know, now that we're into November and the games are carrying some more importance, you'll have people that like to bet the NBA, like to bet the NHL, like to bet the NFL. You know, maybe they were betting baseball throughout the playoffs. Well, they're going to start looking more at college football because in their minds, as the games go up in importance, the intrigue goes up. The number of games that they're going to watch will go up. So you're going to get more investment out there in the college football betting market overall. So you may have some of these games that do open, like possibly an Ohio and Akron game, with an inflated number. And you're going to have some of those sharp versus public setups here, maybe more so than usual, as we go throughout the last few weeks here of the college football season. Because, you know, one of the things that we didn't touch on there with Brian, but we talked about yesterday with Sports Cheetah, is that when you have these teams that have five wins Thanksgiving weekend and they have to win to go to a bowl game, you're paying a premium. And if you start looking at that now, you're not paying as much of a premium, if any premium. You know, you'll get a spot like Pitt, for example. you're not really paying a premium on Pitt having to win two of its last three games to get to a bowl. You're paying a premium because North Carolina is 1-8 and they've got 19 guys out for the season. So the fact that Pitt is looking at bowl eligibility doesn't even really factor into the number. It factors into the mindset for the Panthers, but it doesn't factor into the number. If this game was being played Thanksgiving weekend and Pitt was 5-6 and North Carolina was, you know, 1-10 or whatever they were, or 2-9, whatever the case may be, this number is probably 11.5 or 12 because you have that inflation built in for that must-win situation. And when those things happen, generally speaking, the value is going to be on the other side. So if you can make that play, if you can avoid that must-win factor, because a lot of times, in a lot of cases, the pressure is on that team with 5 wins, and that's the only pressure in the game. The team that's 2-9, they're going to go out there and try to play. They're going to go out there and try to put up numbers. Sure, sometimes they're going to be halfway to the bus and mail it in, but they're free-rolling. You know, they're just going out there and playing. The other team's got to win. So sometimes that can backfire a little bit. So, again, a lot of different considerations here in the month of November, as we talked about the last 2 days, and as we'll continue to talk about here throughout the rest of the college football regular season. One more guest to bring on the program today, that is Mr. Wes Reynolds, at Wes Reynolds, and the number one on Twitter. Wes, how's it going today, man?
Hey, Adam, good to be with you. How are you, man?
I'm doing well. Appreciate your time, as always, here. I know it's a very busy time of year for you with the high volume that you play in all the other sports, and then also college basketball getting underway here in a couple of days. How prepared are you for that?
Yeah, I've been actually working on the conferences this week. Got a little bit of a late start this year. You know, this looks like it's going to be a very interesting year with all the, you know, of course, the scandals that have come out the last month or two. And then, you know, you see this week Georgia Tech getting players suspended, and also UCLA getting players suspended in China. We don't know the terms of the suspension yet, but the three kids that were caught shoplifting. So, I mean, yeah, that game's being played over there, and they're playing each other, so you don't know what players are going to play in that game. So, you know, there's always things that happen. I mean, you do so much preparation, and then, you know, then there's suspensions, and there's guys ineligible. So, you know, you got to make some adjustments on the fly with a lot of these teams.
I know you're a Big Ten guy. I know you're a big Indiana fan. When it comes to college basketball early on in the year, because like you said, I mean, if you get a late start, you've got 351 teams to try and figure out. And of course, not all of them have line games early on, so that's a little bit misleading. But you've probably got 160 to 180 teams, if not more, maybe 200, that you need to have some kind of pulse regarding coming into the season. Do you try to specialize in what's close by? Do you try to look Missouri Valley, Big Ten, Horizon? Do you sort of try to narrow your focus early on?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, because, you know, some of these teams, they're not going to put games up right away. They're not going to, you know, you're not going to have as many, I guess, line games, because you got you'll have some tournaments, maybe not immediately, but so, and plus, I mean, the fact that the officiating, you know, the points of emphasis usually are points of emphasis more early on in the season, so you always have to kind of adjust and be a little careful how the games are called and whatnot, if the refs are a little more foul happy or not. So, you know, probably this year, more than any, I'm going to try to be as cautious as I can and as conservative as I can in terms of playing some of these, because, you know, what's happened the last couple of years, I've gotten off to shaky starts, and then kind of, you know, after around Thanksgiving and into December, start to figure more stuff out. But, you know, really probably want to be a little more cautious this year than usual, I think.
Now, I think it was last year, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, that they changed the shot clock, went down to 30, and there was a lot of consideration regarding that, especially with totals. A lot of people just not really sure what to expect. And, of course, you mentioned the points of emphasis when it comes to fouls and foul fests at the end of the games and all that type of thing. Are there any big rule changes for this year? Because I'll admit, I haven't paid too much attention to college basketball as of yet with football and NHL and all that going on. Are there any big rule changes that could have a significant impact in the market here early on?
You know, I really haven't seen a ton. I think they're doing a couple, but I don't think that they're as pronounced as the ones in years past in terms of, you know, what's going on. I mean, there's a couple that I've noticed. I mean, the coaching box has been enlarged, so no one's going to get a lot of technical fouls. You know, they're also going to, I believe, the play can be stopped and an official can go to a head coach, you know, and there was something like that. I'm trying to remember from memory, but nothing really, I don't think, that's as big as maybe it was a couple, you know, years ago or last year. But I haven't seen a ton, that really jumps out at me right now.
All right, well, we'll see how things progress when it comes to college basketball, and I'm sure we'll talk about it more here in future weeks. But let's go ahead and touch on the NFL, and we'll do what we've done here over the last few weeks and start with this Thursday night game between Seattle and Arizona. Seattle laying a big number, especially for a Thursday night short week game on the road. They're favored by 6 at DSI, -05 on Seattle, 6 at the Greek, 5.5 at Pinnacle and BetOnline. So, you know, a lot of numbers sort of sitting there on 6, 5.5, number open 6.5. So it has come down a little bit. But, Wes, I mean, I don't like Arizona, obviously, but with Drew Stanton at quarterback and Adrian Peterson coming off of a career high in carries last Sunday with 37. Now the quick turnaround for him. I don't like Arizona, but, man, I don't know how you can justify laying a heavy price with Seattle here, not just on a short week, but with Seattle in general.
Yeah, I'm kind of determining if I want to do anything with this game. I mean, the situation, I think, calls for Seattle. I mean, you know, and kind of that short-term market fluctuation, you know, because you did have Arizona, did go and win and cover in San Francisco, weren't very impressive in doing so, and San Francisco really had every chance to kind of stay in that game and just weren't able to do it just kind of because of their own mistakes. But Seattle, that result, I mean, I did not bet Seattle last week, but that result really surprised me in the fact that they were getting some pretty sharp money in the market and they never had a chance. I mean, that number went through the 7 and just never really threatened to cover, and something's up with that offense. I mean, you look, and they were able to put up a bunch of points on a kind of a battered Houston defense. You had a Redskin defense that had quite a few injuries too, and Seattle was just able to do nothing. I mean, if you say, like, gun to head, what are you going to do? I would probably lay the points with Seattle, but, you know, it might be a little bit better to go with a teaser with them and tease them with a game, with some kind of other game on Sunday, because I think that they should win the game, but, you know, it's tough to lay close to a touchdown here.
Yeah, it really is. And I'll say this, I mean, they put up 437 yards and they had almost 3 Bills from Russell Wilson, and Russell Wilson's really been everything for this team this season. I mean, the defense has slacked off a little bit and they've had injuries in the back 7. And obviously this defense isn't quite the same without Earl Thomas, and his status very important here for this Thursday night game. But it's really hard when, you know, you have trouble establishing a running game. Jimmy Graham has not been a good fit for this team. I mean, not that Max Unger has been phenomenal for New Orleans or anything, but Jimmy Graham just hasn't fit here. It's just been one of those square peg round hole situations. You know, Doug Baldwin's a great route runner, terrific receiver, but him and Wilson sometimes have a hard time being on the same page. Like you said, something just isn't clicking with this team. And one of the dangerous things about the NFL is that we've seen Seattle do this before, where they've gotten off to slow starts. I think the one year when they got to the Super Bowl, they started 3-3, and people were kind of looking at them going, what the hell is wrong with this team? And then, of course, they put it all together. I think there's that sentiment out there in the market that this team will put it all together, but I certainly wouldn't bet on it this week. I think you hope that Seattle plays poorly here and then come back on them in week 11 on Monday night against Atlanta, because Atlanta is a team that I think could be, you know, in line for some difficulty there in that spot, especially if Seattle can get healthy with the extra rest.
Yeah, I think so too. And then a lot of the things with Seattle, and we've talked about this in the past, I think it's been offensive line based. Yeah, I mean, Russell Wilson has really had to make, you know, a lot of plays and really put even more burden on his shoulders. I think with the fact that they haven't been able to get the running game at least consistently. I actually thought that they might trade for a running back, you know, for some more depth in the trade deadline, and they never did. Now, they did get Dwayne Brown from Houston, which you think, you know, should help the offensive line. Of course, he was a long-term holdout for Houston, and then I believe played a game, and then they traded him to Seattle. But I think that's really been their kind of, I guess, setback in terms of offense has really been based with that offensive line, because, you know, Wilson seems like he's under pressure all the time, and, you know, there would be designed runs where they want to get him out of the pocket and on the move, but a lot of the stuff getting out of the pocket and being on the move is because the offensive line hadn't been able to really protect him very well. So, tricky spot here. I mean, if you're doing something with it and don't want to lay the spread, probably teaser, or if you like to do a money line parlay, which I don't like to do a lot of those in the NFL, would probably be the way to go, because I think they win the game, but it's a very tricky line and a very, I think, scary spot for Seattle.
And one last thing about this game, and I don't know what your take on this is, but generally speaking, you're going to see sharp money come in on the Thursday home dog, especially one of this size. We've already seen it a little bit. Numbers guys kind of grabbing those 6.5 and sixes at some books. As I said, it's down to 5.5 in a place like Pinnacle, which is a pretty good indicator of the sharp segments of the betting market. I'm curious, though, like, how much further is this number going to go down? How much more sharp investment are we going to see? Because the public in a standalone game is going to take Seattle. I don't think they're going to be too concerned with the problems that you and I have addressed here. So I just wonder how far down this goes for somebody that may be interested in like a Seattle moneyline parlay with, you know, one of the NBA primetime games or an NHL card on Thursday night. I'm just curious to get your thoughts on where you think this number goes, if anywhere.
Yeah, I'm not sure it's going to go down a lot farther. I mean, I think your assessment's right in terms of, you know, the public is going to take, you know, they're going to take the team, not necessarily the number. They don't care if it's 5 or 6. I mean, if they like Seattle, they're going to take Seattle, you know, no matter what the number is. But I don't see this crashing, you know, down to 3 or 4 or anything like that. But I certainly don't anticipate it going up to 7 or anything like that. If you're Arizona people, you know, kind of waiting for maybe some value out there or waiting for a 7, I don't think you're necessarily going to see it. So I think it's going to stay in this probably 5-6 type range. I don't see a ton of movement here.
All right, let's go to Sunday game 251-252. First game on the board, the Minnesota Vikings off of a bye take on the Washington Redskins off of what effectively amounted to a walk-off win in Seattle. So this is not a great spot for Washington going northwest to the East Coast, Minnesota off the bye. We've seen the market steam bye week teams with regularity. We talked about that last week. We'll talk about it again the week before that. We've talked about it pretty much every week that we've had bye weeks. This week, though, we're not seeing it. And in fact, we're seeing money on Washington. Now, it's not a significant move to go from 2.5 to 1. There are a couple of 1.5s. There's one pick 'em out there at 5 dimes. But, Wes, does this line move surprise you at all?
You know, it actually doesn't, because I think you're not seeing it because we don't know which quarterback is going to start for Minnesota. And Teddy Bridgewater is available. play for Minnesota. And I mean, he is their, you know, I think their franchise quarterback, the kid that they drafted, and they've had two guys that have started and had varied degrees of success at times with Keenum and with Sam Bradford. And I mean, you've got a team right now that's 6-2 and they're winning, you know, with defense and I think running the ball primarily with defense, with Mike Zimmer being more of a defensive minded coach, longtime defensive coordinator in Dallas. You don't know really which quarterback. I think that's why it's kind of stuck here at the one, because you know that Washington can be a capable team, that Kirk Cousins can have really good performances, but you also know that there's a lot of unknowns with Minnesota. I mean, if they play Bridgewater, yeah, Bridgewater's the best quarterback of the three long term, but, you know, he hasn't played at all. So you're going to put him out there, and there's going to be some inevitable rust that he's got to knock off. And I mean, you know, it's just hard to envision, you know, somebody coming back from an injury the first time and then being able to just pick up where he left off. And that's why I think this line is kind of where it is, and that's why I think this is probably one of the more tricky games on the board, because you don't know what you're getting yet with Minnesota. So there might be a lot of people out there waiting to see, okay, let's verify who the starting quarterback is going to be before you see any type of movement in this game. So it looked kind of like it's just in a little bit of a holding pattern.
Well, and of course, too, you look at this Washington injury report, and I'm looking at it on Pro Football Reference as I'm looking at the stats for the Redskins here. They have 15 guys listed as questionable for this week, including some big names like a Jordan Reed, like Trent Williams, who was out last week. They have several linemen on this list, some skill position guys. Pretty much covers the whole gamut of this roster, where they have guys that they're not sure if they're going to play or not. And obviously some of them mean more than others. A guy like Jordan Reed, for example, obviously very significant to Kirk Cousins, especially going up against a really good Minnesota defense. So that's something that's holding up this line as well. And you know, it's really challenging for me here, Wes, because I look at this Washington team. They've turned the ball over 14 times this year, which is not good, obviously. And it's one of the highest numbers in the NFL. They're actually tied for sixth. But 10 of those are fumbles that they've lost. They lead the league in that category by two. So maybe a little bit of fumble luck regression for this team. You know, Kirk Cousins is taking care of the football. He's got some decent numbers, especially when everybody's healthy. So Washington, to me, looks like a team that I want to buy if they're healthy, but they're going up against an elite Minnesota defense and they're not healthy. And then you've got the Bridgewater thing that you just outlined and talked about. This is probably a complete stay away game, but it would not surprise me here if Washington closes a favorite.
Yeah, I think if you like the Redskins, the best thing to do, I think, would probably be to try to tease right now when you have some 1.5s out there and maybe can tease it to 7.5 or 8. Because this game strikes me as a one-score game maybe either way, but it's not a game that I'm willing to really go to a window to bet, you know, either side in terms of just the traditional beating the 11-10. You know, I think that there are maybe other spots on the board to try to do that rather than this game.
And it's tough. I know you're in the Super Contest, and we touch on this every time that we have a segment. You'll actually be filling in for Sports Jitta here the week of Thanksgiving with the Super Contest segment, assuming it still all works out with your schedule. But you know, we're running into this problem again, where we've got four teams on a bye. We're not playing the Thursday game. This game looks like it's a major question mark. Pittsburgh's laying double digits on the road in Indianapolis. Detroit's laying 12.5, 13. The Rams are laying 11. New England's laying 7.5 on the road against Denver. Carolina's laying double digits at some shops against Miami. And then Mitch Trubisky's Chicago Bears are laying 6 against Green Bay. And you know, you sort of look at that game and you go, well, this is kind of crazy. And then you think a little bit more about it and you go, okay, maybe it makes sense because of what we've seen from Brett Hundley. So again, this week, we're just crossing games off left and right. And it's so frustrating to do. And You know, I mean, last week I wound up taking the Colts with 1,674 other entries just because I felt like I didn't have a whole lot of other choices. So it looks like another tough week in the Super Contest.
Yeah, and I did the same. I did the same thing with the Colts game last week. I'm thinking, okay, they're 6 and they're 13. And, you know, usually, I mean, you're not going to get as many of those spots as you may be used to in the Super Contest where you could really pick off stale numbers. But at the point where it's a touchdown difference, it's like, you know what? I think we had a conversation about this, and I was like, you know, if it's that big of a discrepancy, I mean, I guess I got to take my chances. If I get egg on my face, I get egg on my face. You know, I went ahead and did that as well. But yeah, the lines I think are kind of all over the place this week, and I think you have to kind of hold your nose on some of these spots and just go ahead and kind of take the plunge and almost like hope for the best.
Well, we'll move down to game 269-270 here between Dallas and Atlanta. And this one at bookmaker opened Atlanta -3/-25. Now it's +3/-119 on Dallas, excuse me. So Dallas has been the sharp side here early on in the week. A couple of books, BetOnline and Five Dimes, have actually made the leap down to 2.5. Matchbook and Exchange, not available to U.S. players, also at 2.5, which is one of the sharper markets that's out there. So it's been a steady stream of Dallas money, and this is not a surprise to me. I was actually surprised with where the opening number came out, more so than the movement. But now you kind of look at the situation here where if you are in a handicapping pool or if you're even just looking at the betting market in general, there's no interest in Atlanta this week. And generally speaking, that's the time you want to play a team.
Yeah. And actually I'm intending, I haven't done it yet. I'm looking more to play the Falcons this week than Dallas, because I think, you know, Dallas, I mean, you never know with the Elliott thing. I mean, this is like a week to week thing now, you know, is the guy going to play? Is he not going to play or whatnot? But, I mean, I think that, you know, if he's out for a certain game, I mean, in a one-game situation, I think they can recover without him. So, I mean, that's just kind of another wrinkle added to it. But I think Atlanta last week, you know, after they kind of got going off that loss against the Patriots, then it was like, you know, Atlanta's maybe starting to put it together after they struggled and quote-unquote Super Bowl hangover, even though they started the season with a couple wins. You know, people were kind of up on them against Carolina, and they took the bulk of the money, and Carolina, you know, sacked up at home and were able to hang on for a win. And Atlanta just didn't look, you know, just didn't look right last week. So I think now, because, and that's how the NFL market works. I mean, you're in love with a team for a week, and then they lay an egg, and then you want nothing to do with them again. And it's like, oh, they burned me, so I can't play them the next week. But, I mean, I think that this is a pretty short price for Atlanta. And I think if you see the Super Contest lines released later tonight, now I think they're going to release it at 3. I'm pretty sure they are. But if you see 2.5, you know, I think that you'll see some sharps, some maybe some of the sharper players, you know, if you know some guys that are in the, that are in the field, especially like in the Super Contest Gold, you know, they'll go ahead and lay that Atlanta under 3, but and they may even lay the 3 for, you know, for sure as well. And I think I'm looking at where the Westgate line is right now, and it's at the solid 3. So I think, you know, that's what eventually you're going to be laying. So, but I do like Atlanta here. I think this is kind of a situation right now. If you look at the pulse of the division, you look at Carolina right now at 6-3. You look at New Orleans at a surprising 6-2. Tampa Bay, you know, seems like the bottom might be starting to fall out a little bit. Atlanta's got to keep some pace here, and I think you know, Dallas does too with Philadelphia, but you know, I really think that this is kind of a back against the wall game for the Falcons, and that would be the side I'd be looking to play here.
What keeps worrying me about Atlanta, though, is this is a team that's 19th in points right now. They have 170, and of course there are some teams behind them and in front of them that have played one game more than they have. But they're tied for first in yards per play. So they're moving the football. They're just not doing anything when they get to the red zone. You know, they're kind of bogging down when they get there. And a lot of times that's a play design thing. And again, for those that play the Bang the Book radio drinking game, I'm going to reference Kyle Shanahan, so go ahead and start drinking. But that's the one thing that they really miss with Kyle Shanahan. The personnel is still the same. I think Steve Sarkisian's a smart guy, but I think Kyle Shanahan was just on another level when it came to play design and the ability to get guys open. And for the Falcons here to be, you know, below the midpoint in terms of points scored while being tied for first in yards per play, that speaks to a really significant problem. Now, numbers guys are going to look at it and say, okay, well, at some point this needs to regress to the mean. At some point, the fact that they're getting over 6 yards per play is going to yield points. But again, last week, they get out 10-0. They have 6.1 yards per play. They only scored 17 points. So against the Dallas defense, that's pretty good, especially when Sean Lee is able to be out there. You know, I'm still worried about that. So I feel like at this point, Atlanta's a stay-away team for me. I don't know if they're going to reach that potential, but I understand and respect the side that you're looking at as well.
Well, and you know, you're right in terms of kind of their offensive woes. And you kind of saw it a little bit in terms of what you bring up with Sarkisian and the game against New England, where it seemed like Atlanta was getting all that sharp money. And it's like, man, the Patriots were like free on the road, you know, on a neutral site. Now, all of a sudden, they're only 3 or 2.5 at home. You know, what's going on here? And Patriots ended up winning comfortably. And, you know, when they're running those, you know, those pitch plays and those toss sweeps and stuff, and I'm thinking, you know, and I had a tweet, I was like, you know what, that works against Arizona State. That's not going to work against even a struggling NFL Patriots defense. So, you know, there are some design deficiencies, I think. And there was also last week Julio Jones dropped a touchdown in the end zone in the second half, which he's not ordinarily going to do. So, you know, I just think that there's a little bit, there's some timing. There's obviously the switch in offensive coordinator, and there's different little timing issues. And you've kind of seen that with Atlanta all year. But that's where you kind of got to bank on if you're taking that side, okay, you know, this is the week that they're kind of going to put it all together. And I actually do think this is probably the week that they will put it together.
All right, let's shift gears to the hardwood here for a few minutes. I want to talk some NBA with you here, Wes. And like I mentioned in our notes before the show, everybody except for the Chicago Bulls has played at least 10 or 11 games here so far this season. The Bulls won't play their 10th game until Friday. And quite frankly, they really don't need to play another game the rest of this season here because they're just one of the worst teams in the NBA. But we've seen 10 to 11 games from pretty much everybody here. Anything really stand out to you thus far? Anybody a big surprise? Anybody a big letdown? Any trends that you picked up on? Anything like that?
You know, not so much in trends. I think just looking at how some teams have played. I think, you know, some teams, I mean, you're going to deal with short-term streaks all the time. I mean, we kind of saw it with Minnesota a couple weeks ago, and it was like when they had gotten off to a bad start because they get that big win in Oklahoma City, and then they come home and Indiana shoots about 67% on them at home, and then the next night they have to go on the road to Detroit and they get beat pretty handily, but then they really haven't lost since. Now they're seven and three, and it's like, okay, everything's right with this team. And so, you know, there's going to be some surprises. It's still so early in the season. I mean, I'm a little surprised to see Detroit 7-3. I'm surprised to see Orlando 6-4. You know, just kind of looking at the board tonight, I'm surprised that the Knicks are 6-4. They've been able to win a lot of close games. They were able to come back Sunday night against the Pacers, who had them down double digits, and Charlotte had them down double digits going into the fourth quarter, and all of a sudden the Knicks come back. And I think this is fodder for the fodder for the Porzingis critics is really decreasing because you know how it is with New York teams. You know, the people on social media and people are homers and get hyped up for a player, and you're like, well, do I really believe it or do I really don't believe it? Excuse me. And I mean, Porzingis, he's the real deal. And I mean, you know, if you want to, I mean, the criticism is probably just being a hater at this point, because I mean, this guy is somehow carrying this team to wins in games, even at home, that they should lose. I mean, they're down double digits to Indiana. They should lose that game. They were down last night to the Hornets. They should lose that game, but somehow they find a way. And he's been coming up in just really big moments for this team, and so they're a little bit of a surprise. And I mean, and I'm looking at these surprises in terms of the basis of their win totals. I mean, there's so many games left to play, but you know, some of the teams that struggle, I don't necessarily, you know, worry about if they get a loss or two, and they're not really struggling. They're 8-3, but Golden State's put up a couple clunkers. I'm not worried about Golden State. I mean, I think they're going to be fine. Cleveland is an interesting matter because, you know, it seems like when they want to play, they're still one of the better ones in the league, but they just have so many spots where it's like, man, these guys are just, you know, they don't give a damn. And you wonder, you know, if that eventually is going to catch up with them. Now, you know, last night off that awful loss on Sunday to Atlanta, they came out and they had a little bit more of a focus, and that's why I ended up just playing Cavs first quarter, because I thought that, you know, one thing I heard on their broadcast last night, in all their games, they had played 10 games at that point. They had only been leading after the first quarter in two of those 10 games, and they were 4-6, and now they're 5-6. So they happened to win it last night. So you're noticing against some of these subpar teams, they had been coming out very slow in the quarters, but against teams that they view as rivals, like Milwaukee and Washington, you saw on Friday night on ESPN, they came out focused. They're not coming out focused against the Orlandos and against the Bulls and against the Pacers, but they're coming out focused against, you know, who they view as the team they're going to play in the playoffs.
Yeah, that's something that a lot of people have been talking about in the Cleveland media and on Twitter here, is that, you know, yeah, they've lost six games, but excuse me, they've all been to teams that they're not all that interested in. You know, they beat the Wizards, they've beaten the Bucks twice. Who knows if they beat Boston if Gordon Hayward's leg doesn't explode in that game, but still, they did win that one, and, you know, obviously that's a game that they really want to win. So, you know, yeah, I mean, I think it's really fascinating to kind of look at here in general. You know, the Cavs they know that if they make the playoffs, they're the favorite to win the East. Golden State, you know, I mean, Golden State doesn't lose three games out of 11 very often, but their motivations have changed a little bit here this year. I'll be really curious to see what that Cavs-Rockets number opens up here later today for tomorrow's game, which will be on TNT, but I do want to touch base with you on a couple of interesting home road splits here, Wes. You mentioned the Knicks. 5-2 at home, so they played seven games at the Garden. 1-2 on the road, so only three games away from home. Is that something you look at here early on in the season, is some of those big disparities of home games versus road games? I mean, the Rockets have played 9 on the road, only 4 at home. Excuse me, 7 on the road and 4 at home. The Jazz 7 at home, where they're 4-2, but they're 0-4 on the road. Is that something you look at, you know, in terms of looking for some betting angles, or is the sample size just too small?
It is, I think, something that you can look at. I mean, and especially for shops that progressively maybe update their season win totals throughout the season. Not all of them do, of course. I mean, it was just they kind of stick with the number, but some of them they will adjust progressively as the season goes along for maybe people that didn't step into that water before the season. But that's, you know, that's an interesting thing with New York. I mean, that they're able to win these games at home, but you look at them on the road, I mean, they've only played 3 of 10 games. So when you look at a season win total, it would probably be adjusted up from, you know, I think they might have closed 30-something, very low 30s. You know, maybe they adjust that up to 33 or 34 or something, and then that's the time to get in, perhaps on the under if you don't trust these guys on the road. But, you know, some of the home court advantages I think have rung true that we talked about early in the season. I mean, you look at Utah, they're 5-2, and they've actually lost their last two games. They started out 5-0, and then they lost last night, of course, to Philly. I mean, Utah's always going to be a tough home court, and same with Denver. I think they are also they're 4-2 at home. Those are tough. We've talked about that before in terms of the travel angles, proximity to Las Vegas, the altitude, you know, how good they've been at home. I think, you know, when you're looking at some of these angles, I mean, you have to look at different spots in terms of, you know, different streaks. I mean, you usually don't like to – you like to play with streaks and not necessarily against streaks. But, I mean, you're going to see some spots where bad teams are going to cover. I go back to Monday night with Atlanta getting 8 at Boston, and they also – I also had them first quarter and first half. Boston was on their third road game in 4 nights. Those still exist, despite the fact that that they started the schedule earlier and they're trying to make the schedule easier for these teams. And Boston had gotten 2 road wins, and now you know, returning home, this was going to be their last game on the trip before they went back home, which they start tonight against the Lakers. And Brad Stevens really experimented with a lot of, you know, some different lineups. I mean, he had played 10 guys in the first quarter. And I'm like, okay, you know, what's he kind of doing here? I guess he's kind of maybe using this as an experimental, because you know that Atlanta is down on talent this year, but you know that they're at least well-coached and they're going to play hard, and they at least had some confidence getting that win and holding on Sunday in Cleveland, where they were – pretty much the wire-to-wire leader. So, I mean, you look at spots like that, and then there was a spot, Sacramento last night, plus 11. I ended up taking them and ended up cashing a couple tickets on that game. But Sacramento is really, really bad. So, I mean, they are a total hold-your-nose team. I mean, I don't know who's worse. I think the Bulls at least play harder in terms of, you know, teams that are in the bottom here, but and same with Dallas. But Sacramento, they don't have the worst record, but they're probably the worst team I've seen by a decent margin.
One last thing I'll ask you about here for this week, Wes, is that you talked about it a little bit there in terms of running down some of the bets you've made, playing full games, first quarters, first halves. You like to do a lot of that derivative betting, live stuff, quarter betting, half betting, things of that sort. Is there anything you've picked up on here early on in the season, a substitution rotation thing, maybe a team that just doesn't have depth, where you're kind of, you know, picking on them game after game in the derivative market?
Yeah, I mean, Sacramento, I think, is one of those teams that you can always do. If you look last night, I mean, they were down the thing is, you got to project which quarter, because they are always going to have one quarter that is an absolute real lemon throughout the game. I think that they've had one every game. Last night, you looked, and it was 25-10 for Oklahoma City after the first quarter, and then the Kings win the second quarter 32-16, and you know, they're going to be competitive in other quarters, but there's always that one quarter, I think, with Sacramento, where it is just a disaster, where you'll see them score single digits, or you'll see them lose a quarter at some point by like 20 points. And it happened last year, and it seems like it's happening again. But in terms of like short-term trends, I mean, you know, I really, you know, I kind of evaluated, I guess, a little bit game by game, and, you know, looking at the market, trying to just pick up some tells. I mean, it's nothing, I guess, that I've particularly chronicled, you know, probably because of time and just, you know, not having time to do all that. Only so much you can do in a day. But just look, you know, looking at different spots and looking at the scheduling dynamics and, you know, trying to see if you can capitalize on a team that's won a couple national TV games. You know, that's what I actually did with Memphis last night going against Portland. Portland is off two really super close wins. They, of course, had that TNT game where they beat the Lakers and then Damian Lillard hit that three to win it. And then they had the NBA TV game on Sunday, I believe, where they held on against Oklahoma City late after they had a decent lead. And Oklahoma City came back, but they were able to hold on late in the fourth quarter. And, you know, and that game last night, Memphis, I mean, you know, they just looked like the side because, you know, how many times can you keep winning these close games all in a row? So, you know, that might be something I look at tonight with Orlando, who has lost, of course, a couple straight off their hot start. But you've got the Knicks, who have won all these games at home. So, you know, I would be looking to kind of play against that because, of course, the hype's going to be on the Knicks. So I would be looking to play Orlando tonight and just keep looking for those situations because that's what's going to pop up.
Great insights on today's show from Wes Reynolds. You can get the same from him on Twitter at Wes Reynolds and the number one. Wes, always a treat, man. Thank you so much for joining me, and I'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks, Adam. Always a pleasure, man.
Good stuff here on today's show from Brian Leonard of WagerTalk.com and also that Wednesday Wagering with Wes Reynolds segment. Coming up on our Thursday edition of Bang the Book Radio, two professional handicappers join us, Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com and Rolf Michaels from WagerTalk.com. Friday, Westgate Super Contest selection segment for Week 10. Myself and Sports Cheetah coming off of a 4-1 week for me, 24-21 on the season now. Talk about my picks and my thoughts for Week 10. Then also Brent from DSI Sportsbook with this week's version of the Odds Report. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.